Okay, I'm sitting here with Mark Dowding, who is a folk singer and Lancashire historian, and he's been a really good friend to Lancashire authors over the years, and also to me, because he's done a few things for me in the past, and I'm very grateful for that. I'd like to call him a really good friend, and I'm honoured to be speaking to him today. So how are you, Mark?
I'm very well, thank you, Peter. Thanks for asking me along.
Yeah. So just tell me a little bit about your family and your background.
Well, I was born in Ormskirk Hospital in 1961, which I'm 61 now. The time flies, doesn't it, when you think back? My dad was originally he worked at BTR in Leyland, making rubber belts, conveyor belts, things like that. And then he started work for Balfour Beatty. BICC it was in those days. It was just before Balfour Beatty took them over. Electrifying railways, and he was down at King's Cross and did other jobs as well. I think he did the northern part of the West Coast Main Line from Liverpool up to Teebay and Shap and that sort of area up to Glasgow. Occasionally we went down to London just for a weekend with him because he was away like on a month at a time, so we never hardly saw him. And it got to the point where you're thinking when he comes home, he says, when are you going back? So we've just seen him, we're asking questions about him going home again, but going back again. But that's what he did for a living till he retired. And then my mum was sort of the typical housewife at the time. She just kept the house going and managed the bills and all the rest of it. Money was tight originally, but, when my dad got a better job, obviously the money started coming in a bit better, so... We lived in a house on a farm. My mum's parents, my mum's dad was a farmer. He moved down from Hale in North Lancashire. His father owned the farm up there, and when he came to retire, he asked my granddad if he wanted to take over. But because it was, my granddad liked horses, and tractors were starting to come in at this point, and my granddad, he wasn't interested in running a farm in that way with tractors and things. So his friend had already come down to Parbold at the time, and he got in touch with my granddad and said, well, there's a job down here if you want as a cowman. So that's where they came down. My dad's mum and dad, they were in Bristol. They were from that sort of area. My granddad, my dad's dad, was a tax inspector. They moved him from Bristol to Aberystwyth, and then from Aberystwyth to Liverpool. As a tax inspector. And then when the 1941 came along, the bombing started in Liverpool, so my granddad moved inland, and they found originally it was a terrace in Apley Bridge, but there was no hot water, so it didn't really do for them. So they found and looked around, my grandmother looked around and found another house in Apley Bridge called Finch House, and that was a big building. It was like a three-gabled affair with one part of the house was being lived in by a farmer who farmed the land around. So they rented the other two parts. So they stayed there until 1968, until the house was actually pulled down and modern houses were built on the land. Mm-hmm. So that's where my mum and dad were able to meet, because they were then in the same vicinity. Although from being one in Bristol, one in North Lancashire, they came to Parbold and Apley Bridge, only 2 or 3 miles apart. So my dad met my mum, and they got married in 1960.
That's a romantic story.
Oh, I know, yes. Yeah. And I came along in 1961, right. 12 months later. So, and then my sister came along 12 months after that. So,
you were pretty close ages with your sister then?
Yes, yeah. Yes.
And you got on okay, did you?
Oh, yeah. 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 I know some sisters and brothers fight like cat and dog, but we didn't. We didn't get on all right.
And was your sister interested in music as well?
She was interested in music in the sort of teenage years. I think the Donny Osmond and the Osmonds and David Cassidy and that sort of era. The Bay City Rollers as well came along. Mm-hmm. She actually got a guitar. She was interested in the guitar just before I was. My dad had a friend who would come down to stay for overnight, and then they'd both go down to King's Cross for the month. Tony would bring his guitar with him, and he'd show my sister Deborah chords or whatever, and then I was sort of interested, but Deborah said, oh, I want a guitar for Christmas, so because she wanted one, I want. So we both got guitars for Christmas, but whilst my sister does, no, she did play it, I sort of took it up more. You know, I sort of locked myself away in my bedroom and started listening to records and things and playing along. That's how I learnt. I don't read music. I just listen to the tracks and then try to work the chords out and either strumming or picking eventually.
So what was the sort of thing you played in those days when you started?
I played, the first song we learnt was Streets of London by Ralph McTell.
Oh, wow, that's a good one, that.
It is. It's. I mean, it's still relevant today.
It's timeless, isn't it?
It is, you know. I mean, he wrote it originally, I think, about the streets of Paris.
Right.
But then either he was persuaded to write about London or change it to Streets of London.
Mm.
And from then on, I think it was about 1968 when he recorded it. And then he had a big hit with it in 1974.
Yeah.
A slightly different arrangement, but it sort of made him at that point.
And I believe he's written lots of other songs, but that's the one that everybody asks
him
to perform.
That's the one he can't get off stage without
doing that
one.
Yeah. And he loves doing it as well,
I think he does.
Yeah.
Well, it's his pension, so...
Of course it is, yeah.
Yeah.
So, yeah, so that's where you started. Now, obviously, we're going to talk a little bit more about how your music formed into what you're doing now. But you have picked some songs, haven't you? And I think your first one you picked was Call at the Groups by the Baronites. Is that correct?
That's correct, yeah.
Yeah.
I've chosen that because it was the first record, I think, I actually went to buy. It came out in 1964, so I was only about three at the time. But my mum had the radio on, wireless we called it in those days.
Mm-hmm.
So I'd be listening to all the songs, you know, and a lot of them, they stuck in your mind because they'd be playing over and over again. So we went into the record shop, and I think we went into a booth. I think my dad must have had me in his arms, sort of thing, listening to this record in the booth. And I've still got it actually at home, somewhere. So that
I think we both liked that one because we were singing a little bit about it before.
We were.
And obviously you were in tune anyway.
Yeah.
So yeah, so listen to that now then, and then we'll talk some more after.
The other groups, we think it's a great idea. Send the searchers to Algiers for about 100 years. Let's wish them luck in their new career. We sent them away to earn their pay. What a place it was, and they knew they had to go away and get down on their knees to earn their pay. And they queued all day. Oh yes, we will, sir. We'll clean those saucepans and tins, sir. Yes, sir. There's a little town in Cyprus that's hanging out the streamers to welcome the arrival of Freddy and the Dreamers.
Corporal in the cavalry, please don't pick on me. I am only 5'3". Now I don't like the army life, the Air Force don't like me. Now I can't join the Navy, 'cause I get sick at sea. Are still searching, Freddy is still dreaming, but the stones go rolling along.
just to even up the score, we can soon dig up some more. The bachelors are looking very strong. Wait for me. My Diane. Secret sources, there's a group ideal for the forces. If the caller they revive, this could be heard from the day clock five. On the business boots and business, we've been marching day and night. On the business boots. We've left out there for talented people. When they're on stage, they twist and shout. Who is it?
Well, Mark, a great song that. I really enjoyed listening again. Tell me a bit more about how you actually got into music, what you did at college, and how that affected you, whether you took that sort of thing at college or whether you were inclined in other directions at that time.
Singing Together was the big programme we had at school, which got me interested in music. I mean, at the time, we didn't realise it was folk music. It was just, there were just songs from this country and all over the world. But it sort of sowed the seed, I think, of the sort of songs that I grew up to like. Obviously, when we left primary school, we went to secondary school, music was one of the lessons we did as properly. And again, we didn't do Singing Together or anything like that, but we would do music theory for the first, you know, part of the lesson. And then the teacher would come out of the back cupboard. You know, you go in the back cupboard and come out with a record, and he'd carefully wipe it down and, you know, each side and put it on. It would be a classical record of some description. Don't ask me what, but we just sat and listened to it and appreciated it at the time. But that didn't really have an effect on me at the time. I was more interested in the singing folk songs and things like that. And the reason I got into folk songs was my dad came home once with an LP of the Fivepenny Piece, who were a Lancashire group from the Staley Bridge area. There was a track on this LP which was the Battle of Hastings, a Marriott Edgar monologue, which my dad wanted to learn. But there are all sorts of other songs that they'd written as well and performed. So there's one or two of those took me fancy, so I started learning those. Again, playing the record and singing along, playing along and working the chords out. And eventually I saw a programme on the television. It was called Thank You and Good Night. It was on Granada Television. The end of the night, this is when television actually went to bed. It closed down at 11 o'clock or whatever time it was. But they had this programme. It was only a five-minute programme. They'd record a concert by whoever, in this case it was the Oldham Tinkers, and play 5 minutes of it, or a song, whatever it might be. So I saw this and I thought, oh, they look good. They interested me. So I went and bought one of their records. And from there I started learning some of their songs. And eventually I found that I was able to sing these songs just in my bedroom, really. But then the PTA groups at school started doing nights. And they'd have the kids who would be in groups of their own. They would be on stage doing 10 or 15 minutes. You know, it'd be two or three songs, something like that. And I got involved with one of the groups, and I was able to bring some of these songs to these concerts. I mean, the Spinners as well were an influence on everybody, I think, because they had a regular television series.
You did, I remember that.
Yeah, yeah. For years. So their songs were obviously in the conscience. But I was able to bring something else as well, you know, the Lancashire songs that never really got an airing on the television. And one of the teachers was interested in what I was doing, and he gave me an LP by Harry Boardman, called Deep Lancashire. This came out in 1968, and it was Topic Records who produced it. It was their best-selling LP of the time. And that had on it Harry Boardman, who was the Lancashire singer and researcher, the Oldham Tinkers, Mike Harding, a poet from Rochdale, Harvey Kershaw, and one or two other people. And that really got me interested in Lancashire songs. And from there, I was singing these songs, and one of the kids at school said, oh, me and my brother are starting a folk club next week. Do you want to come along? I had no idea what a folk club was, but I said, yeah, I'll come along. What do we do? Oh, you just sing a couple of songs in the night, you know, that'll be all right. So I did that. And from there, I met somebody else. This was in Ormskirk. And from there, somebody else came along who ran a folk club fairly close to me as well, at the Dickinson Arms at Wrightington, at Dangerous Corner. I said, well, I can't get there because I didn't drive or anything. My dad was busy at the time. Don't worry, I'll come and get you. Now, this guy was coming from Widnes, and he came to pick me up. He was only up the road, so he wasn't out of his way. But I was very grateful to him for doing that, because it sort of opened up this network of folk clubs that I had no idea about. It's a bit like jazz clubs. You know, you know they're there, but you don't know where they are. But from there, I was singing a couple of songs a week and learning more songs. And eventually, they made me a resident, which basically meant that you were there with whoever else was a resident to keep the club running. So if they didn't have very many singers that night, you know, you would maybe do two or three more than anybody else, just to make sure you got through till 11 o'clock.
Oh, that's excellent. And you mentioned Widnes there, and every time I hear Widnes, I always think about Paul Simon, because that's the station he wrote Homeward Bound on when he recorded it in the 60s.
That's right, yeah. Very famous, yeah.
Yeah. So, from there, you went to do other things, obviously. And when is it you started sort of becoming Mark Dowding, the performer?
I suppose it was probably a bit later on. I mean, I was just doing floor spots in folk clubs at that time. And, you know, me and my dad used to go to several clubs in the area that we found. You know, once you go to one, you find there's others around, and people would be there from other clubs and say, oh, why don't you come to our club? So we used to do that. So there's one or two regular clubs we went to. When I went to college in Manchester, I started going to Harry Boardman's club, because he was still running a club in Manchester then. This would have been about 1981. I met the Oldham Tinkers in, it was a Freshers Week concert at Salford University, and I asked them where Harry's club was, and they told me, so I went along. I had met Harry before this, so but he was pleased to see me when I turned up. And it was a case of, you know, doing the songs there, and maybe you get one or two songs, depending who was in. But eventually, Harry made me a resident there as well. So it's quite an honour, really, to be a resident at Harry's club. Because the people that were there, I was the only one I'd never heard of. You know, it was that sort of club, you know. You'd go in and everybody, all the names used to go there. You know, they might be passing through, but they'd call into Harry's club on a Saturday night, wherever they were. And the residents there, you know, famous people, which I won't mention because, you know, people who were listening probably won't know who they are. But to me, anyway, they were.
I think everybody knows Oldham Tinkers, Oldham Weavers, and things
Weavers.
Like that.
Yeah, they were another group that got me interested as well, because my dad took me to see them at our local pub in Parble, the Windmill Hotel. They were doing a charity night. And it was a tiny little room, you know, but the place was packed. I'd never seen them before, but I really enjoyed what they did, and I bought their LP that had just come out. And again, listened to that, started singing along and playing with that. And some of those songs got into my repertoire. And I still see them. I still see the Horton Weavers. I mean, Tony sadly passed away a few years ago, but still in contact with David Littler. Mm. You know, he rings me up occasionally, see how I'm getting on.
And of course, the important thing about folk songs is that they mean something, don't they? They have a message. And I think that's possibly, listening to the words of them, is possibly how you got into discovering history and the history of dialect and stuff like that, all coming from that sort of background, I suppose.
That's right. When I was at school, I did economic history. Now, this was slightly before I got into the industrial songs of Lancashire, the cotton and the coal mining songs and that sort of genre of songs. But it was so boring, to be honest with you. Listening to the teacher reading from her page, and we wrote it all down onto our page, it never sort of went through the brains of either of us. But had I been interested in the Lancashire songs a couple of years earlier, these history lessons were all about those songs.
Right.
You know, it was Peterloo and things like that, which I always remember writing down. It's stuck in my brain. 16th of August 1819, a meeting held on Petersfields, Manchester, broken up by the military, 11 killed, 400 injured, full stop. And that was it, you know. But when you sort of find the songs that people have written, either at the time in the 1819s and further, or more modern songs looking back at the time, that history is all encompassed in six or seven verses.
Yeah.
You know.
I think in a way that's like history in action, isn't it? Yeah. Because you're actually singing about it rather than just learning it from a book.
Yeah.
And it brings it, makes it more real.
It does. It does. Yeah. Moving on a bit, we did, myself and my mate Chris did a CD called Manchester Ballads, which was a book that Harry put together in 1983 along with Roy Palmer. And when you get, look at this book. They're basically 35 ballads all about how Manchester grew up in the 18th and 19th century, from being basically a small town to the Cottonopolis that it became, you know, with the Manchester Ship Canal at the end of the century being brought into play. But when you look at the words on the page, they mean nothing. When you start singing them, they come to life. And I really enjoyed doing those 35 songs. Really good. I mean, we go back to, we mentioned The Streets of London earlier. I mean, that song, I said, was written in 1968, still relevant today. And I believe we're going to listen to it now.
I think we are, yes. Yeah. And then we'll have a little bit more chat about you and your working life, I suppose. And unfortunately, you had to work to support yourself. But these days, you sing with, you know, you sing for a living, basically, don't you?
Yeah.
More or less, yeah. So we'll listen to that now. So, Streets of London by Ralph McTell.
Have you seen the old man in the closed down market, kicking up the paper with his worn out shoes? In his eyes you see no pride, and held loosely at his side, yesterday's paper telling yesterday's news. So how can you tell me you're lonely, and say for you that the sun don't shine? Let me take you by the hand and lead you through the streets of London, show you something to make you change your mind. Have you seen the old girl who walks the streets of London? Dirt in her hair and her clothes in rags. She's no time for talking, she just keeps right on walking, carrying her home in two carrier bags. So how can you tell me you're lonely, and say for you that the sun don't shine. Let me take you by the hand and lead you through the streets of London, show you something to make you change your mind. In the all-night cafe at 11:15, same old man sitting there on his own, looking at the world over the rim of his teacup. Each tea lasts an hour and he wanders home alone. So how can you tell me you're lonely? Don't say for you that the sun don't shine. Let me take you by the hand and lead you through the streets of London, show you something to make you change your mind. Have you seen the old man outside the seaman's mission? Memory fading with the metal ribbons that he wears. In our winter city, the rain cries a little pity for one more forgotten hero and a world that doesn't care. So how can you tell me you're lonely and say for you that the sun don't shine? Let me take you by the hand and lead you through the streets of London, show you something to make you change your mind.
Okay, so that part of your life is over and you left Harris Club because you had to go and find work, I suppose.
Yeah.
Can you talk me through what happened next?
Yeah, well, I didn't actually get my degree, which that's what I was doing in Manchester. It was a case of, like you say, finding some work. And my dad sort of said, write to this chap in, he was in Ipswich at the time, who was working with my dad's company, Balfour Beatty. So I wrote down and said, can I have a summer job? Yes, come on down. So I went down to Ipswich. And that was the point then when I'd done 6 or 7 weeks down there just as a summer job, and I got to the point where they didn't want me back at university, which was a bit of a blow. But so I then sort of said, can I stay on? You know, and they said yes. So for 36 years, I did a summer job, really, but over the years. But I did stay on as a proper employee then, so I was getting a proper salary and all the rest of it. But I still had the interest in the folk music world. So I went to Ipswich Folk Club, found that down there, and they were very welcoming, you know. So they had singers' nights where, you know, anybody could get up and do a what they call a floor spot, 2 or 3 songs, depending on how many were there. Or sometimes they had a guest night where, you know, they'd have a guest who was paid and they might only have 1 or 2 singers that night. So maybe I got night off, if you like, from singing. So that was sort of went on and on and on, week by week. And eventually I was asked if I wanted to go to Peterborough, which meant more money. So, of course, I went to Peterborough. But I found the Peterborough folk scene. And up there you could do something every night of the week. So I was really busy doing that. Now, I was when I was at Harry's Club, I never sang his songs because you didn't, you know, it was one of those things you didn't sort of muscle in on somebody else's act. Although, having said that, Harry very rarely did his Lancashire songs in the club. He would save those for any gigs he did, so he would do Lancashire nights. But occasionally he usually came in with his concertina and did maybe one song, but then he did other songs from his repertoire, and he had quite a big repertoire of songs. And occasionally he came in with his banjo, and I knew then that he'd get one of the songs, you know. So I looked forward to when he brought his banjo in. And there was one time he came in, he said, I'm thinking of getting a new banjo. And I said, what are you doing with that one? And he said, why, do you want to buy it? And Yes, and I've now got it. I've had it since 1984, something like that. And it's still going strong. And it knows all the songs anyway. So anyway, Peterborough came, and I was out every night of the week. And it was, I think when I was in Ipswich, I got my first gig, my first paid gig.
Oh, wow.
That was in Bury St Edmunds. A chap called Dick Miles ran a club up there. And he said, can we book you for this particular night? So he came down to get me, because again, I didn't have a car when I was down there. He came to get me from Ipswich, took me to the club in Bury, and took me back home again. So it was very good of him. So I got paid for that, which was a nice start, if you like. It was a very welcoming club. They're all welcoming clubs, really. And then Peterborough, I got a few more gigs as well around the town. So that was when it sort of started being a second job, if you like, rather than, and obviously the railway was the primary job. Mm-hmm. And when I was there, I met somebody who ran a little sing-around in a pub in Peakirk, just on the outskirts of Peterborough. And he ran the Peterborough Big Band, which I was into that sort of music, but he was looking for a guitarist, and he sort of asked me if I'd like to take the guitarist's seat, which filled me with dread, really, because it was like jazz, you know, that sort of music. I had no idea. And they gave me a pad of music, and I was sort of trying to fathom out what the chords meant, you know, and they went by so fast, you know, it was I couldn't really keep up. So I did the best I could. And then 1987, I was up a ladder doing something, and then the wire came adrift and I came down and I broke my back.
Oh my gosh.
Which put me in hospital for 14 weeks.
Wow.
And that put paid really to anything like the big band, because I had to take me amps and things like that for my guitar with me, and there's no way I could have lifted that anymore, you know. So I sadly had to retire from the big band, which was a shame. I enjoyed doing it, you know, but it was another avenue of music for me. And having played that sort of music, I was able to use the experience and bring the chords, or some of the chords anyway, into the way I played with the folk music. So instead of just the three chord trick, you know, just the C, F, G type of chords, I was able to put more chords in and develop my fingering style as well, you know, for the guitar. So it did have its bonuses, if you like. So there was
there's nothing like listening to a big band, though. Is there?
No.
You know, I mean, we used to go to Spring Hill Club, and they had one called Times 18 there. And they played all the Glenn Miller stuff, and they were absolutely brilliant, you know. And the atmosphere was electric in that club, yeah.
So, that put paid to the big band stuff, but I was still able to do the folk stuff as well. And at this point, I could bring the Lancashire songs into it. Not that anybody understood down in Peterborough, you know. I mean, they had their own accents, you know. The Fenland accent was its own accent, you know. The Lancashire accent is obviously from up this neck of the woods. In fact, when I was living in Peterborough, my landlady, I always had to say sorry or pardon when she said something, because the brain just didn't click what she was saying. You had to get used to the accent. But the moment I'd said pardon, my brain clicked and said, oh, that's what she meant. But she'd already repeated it. You know, so it was got a bit embarrassing, that. But you get used to the way people talk in different parts of the country. But I was doing the Lancashire songs, and there was one song I used to do called Boughton's Yard. It was written by Sam Laycock, who was originally a Yorkshireman. He was brought up in Marsden in Yorkshire. Then when he was small, his family moved to Stalybridge in Cheshire, or that part, northeast corner, the southeast corner of Lancashire, Cheshire, that sort of thing, area. I think there's a bit of Derbyshire in there as well, if you look closely enough. But Boughton's Yard was a song about a courtyard of houses in Stalybridge. It's not there anymore. It's now where Tesco's is, opposite Stalybridge Market Hall. And it was rumoured that this song was the inspiration for a television programme. This writer apparently had heard this song and decided that it would make a good television programme. I'd heard this rumour, but I'd never seen it written down anywhere. There's a few books about, and I'm talking about Coronation Street now. So I wrote to Tony Warren, who was the originator of Coronation Street, and asked him, and I sent him a copy of the words, just in case he had no idea what I was talking about. And he actually rang me up, because in my letter I put my phone number, so he rang me up and we had a good chat about it, and he said, no, I can't tell you what the inspiration was, but I have heard Boughton's Yard, because he said when he was a child actor, in the 40s and 50s. He was working at the BBC in Manchester, in Piccadilly. And when they finished their bit, you know, this is a live performance on Children's Hour or something like that, they would have a lady come in and play the piano just to keep them all quiet, sing them songs. And he remembers this lady singing Boughton's Yard or Bolton's Yard, as well as other songs as well, Lancashire songs. That lady was Violet Carson. Now, if you remember Coronation Street...
Oh, Ina Sharples,
yes. Ina Sharples, the hairnetting dragon.
The hairnet and the milk stout.
The milk stout in the snug. And I thought, well, it'll be great to hear Ina Sharples or Violet Carson singing Boughton's Yard. Because I knew she sang, because she did stuff like Stars on Sunday on a regular basis. Mm-hmm. She was singing hymns and things like that on that. But to hear her singing these Lancashire songs would have been great. But there's no chance of that, is there? Isn't the internet a wonderful thing? Mm. Here is Violet Carson singing Bolton's Yard.
Thank you, Mark. We'll listen to this and then we'll chat some more.
At number one in Bolton's Yard, me granny keeps a school, who hasn't many scholars yet, who's nabbed one or two. They say toad woman's rather cross, well, it may be so. I know she boxed me roundly once and pulled me ears and all. At number three, right facing Pump, Ned Grimshaw keeps a shop. He sells cakes and gingerbread and treacle, pear and pop. He sells old cake as well, does Ned. He has both soft and hard, and everybody buys from him what lives in Boughton's Yard. At number five, I live myself without Susanna Grime, but I do not like her very well, who turns me out sometimes. And when I'm in the snare of light, I have to cower in the dark. I canna pay me lodging brass because I'm out of work. At number seven, there's nobody lives, they left there yesterday. Bum bailiffs came and marked the things and took them all away. They took them on a donkey cart, I don't know where they went. Happen they've been taken and sold because they owed some rent. At number nine, Toad Cobbler lives, Toad Shepherd's mends me shoon. Who's getting very weak and done, he'll have to leave us soon. He reads his Bible every day and sings just like a lark. He says he's practicing for heaven, he's well aid on his work. At number 11, me uncle lives, I call him Uncle Tom. He goes to concerts up and down and plays a kettle drum. In bands of music and such things, he seems to take a pride. And he always makes as big a noise as all he plays beside. And now I've done, I'll say goodbye and leave you for a while. I know I haven't told me tale in such a first-rate style. But if you're right pleased, I'm satisfied, and I ax as no reward for telling you who me neighbours is, what lives in Boughton's Yard.
So, Mark, you said you had 14 weeks in hospital with a broken back. How did you recover from that?
It was difficult, shall we say, because you're never quite sure how it's going to work out.
No, you were a lineman, weren't you?
I was a lineman, yeah.
So
I was
you couldn't
up and down
really
ladders
do that
all
again.
Day.
No.
When I was in hospital, I mean, the consultants came along and said, just lie on your back for 4 or 5 weeks and we'll see what happens then. I was taken actually from Peterborough, because I started off in Peterborough Hospital. That's the closest one they could take me to. And then they moved me down to Addenbrookes, which was a spinal specialist. I mean, the consultant there had a poking abroad and said, just stay on your back. I'm going away for a week and we'll see what happens when I come back. You know, and I couldn't move anyway. He said, don't get up.
Go away.
I wasn't going anywhere.
No.
Anyway, he came back and I did actually lose feeling in one of my legs. I couldn't move it. And through the week, it actually came back, which was a good thing. So after that, it was just a case of conservative bed rest, they called it.
Yeah.
So let the body heal itself, really. So the bones started knitting together again. They moved me back to Peterborough, and I was expecting to be up and about in a week or so, but the consultant there, I think he was a bit more cautious, and he said, oh, we'll keep you in bed for another 6 weeks. So my heart sank a bit at that, but I had all sorts of people coming in and for visiting time. I had about 11 people a day coming in. You know,
I
was getting told off, you know, for having so many people, so I had to sort of limit them coming in. But eventually, they gave me a bed that tips up, you know, so you can control how much it tips. So basically, your blood doesn't rush from your head to your feet.
No.
And you faint, which is what happens. So about half a day of this, and I was up on my feet again, which was a bit, shall we say, awkward, because I didn't know how to walk. You know, what do I do now? You know, I'm up on my feet again. And it's just a case of, right, we'll put one foot in front of the other, and off I went. And I was walking up and down that ward all day, every day, for the next couple of weeks.
Excellent. So you soon got back into the swing of things.
And I swore that I'd walk out of hospital, and I did. They brought me a wheelchair and said, do you want this? I said, yes, that'll be do fine, thank you. And I put all my stuff on that and wheeled it out. I walked out.
Oh, excellent.
So my dad took me home. So I went from Peterborough up to back home to Parbold in Lancashire, and then went to Writington Hospital, which is just up the road, for physiotherapy. So another 2 or 3 weeks. No, it was another 3 months at home before I went back into the office. Mm-hmm. Now, there was no way I could go back up on ladders and things. The risk was too much. They actually had me in the office doing technical stuff. So I still had a bit of a brain there. So I knew what was going on. So it was quite an easy transition from site, if you like, up and down ladders to sitting in the office. Mm-hmm. And occasionally I'd get a trip out to site. You know, if they wanted some materials or things like that, I'd go out. But it was that was where I then sort of changed tack, if you like, from being a linesman to being a designer, a design engineer.
Yeah, and I suppose that helped you in other things later on, didn't it? Learning that trade, learning to learn, you know, to do the technical stuff.
Yeah,
yeah.
Well, I'd been on site, you know, on the track doing stuff, so I knew what was going on in the air. Mm. I knew the materials, and I knew what things were required and where things went, so you know, I had quite a good experience of one side of it, and I brought that into the other side. So while I was learning the technical side of it, I was being able to bring the practical side of it into it as well. So I felt I was, you know, being able to bring quite a bit to the job, you know.
That's great. Yeah.
And people used to, this up to the day I left, people were sort of asking me, what are these part numbers? You know, because you know, catalogues full of part numbers of assemblies and sub-assemblies and components, and they just become second nature after a while.
Yeah, you just spout what it is right away because you've used it so much.
Yeah, that's right. Yeah, so I like to think I was useful in that respect.
Yeah. Well, that's good. I mean, and of course, these days, I mean, you use a lot of your technical ability to set up your sets and things, don't you? I mean, your computer ability is really good for a start, and of course, you understand acoustics, you understand sound, you understand all of it really. And even camera. I mean, you do camera work as well, don't you?
Yes, I was. I was asked to bring my camera into to work to photograph everybody. You know, for badges.
Oh yeah.
You know, we had to have a badge at some point, so I had to photograph everybody. So I used, because somebody said, oh, I've got this little camera. I said, that'll be no good. Do you want me to bring mine in? You know, I had a digital SLR. So I set that up on a tripod and got everybody in against a wall, you know, so it was a white wall, and photographed them, you know, like almost like they were criminals. But,
the usual suspects.
But it did the job. It did the job. So,
That's good. That's really good. And I think your love of jazz is going to come into your next choice of song, isn't it?
Yes, one of the songs we did with a big band was, I think it was Sammy Nestico who wrote Hey Burner. And it was Count Basie, I think, had a big hit with it. And that was one of my favourite songs because I could play it almost properly.
Okay.
But I think we're going to hear that now. So yeah, it's just another side of my musical interest.
So Hey Burner by Count Basie. Thank you, Mark. We'll speak again anon.
Okay. Thank you.
So you went on to sing quite a lot of songs and eventually started recording them, I believe.
Yes, somebody said, you want to make a... There was a tapes in those days, CDs. They were in, but they weren't in... They were too expensive, I think, for folk artists to... or certainly amateur. And I say amateur in the sense that we weren't being paid as a professional to bother with. But somebody said, you want to make a CD... Or a recording. So there was somebody I knew, Chris Pollington, who, if anybody remembers the group Strawhead, he was the keyboard player in that. But he also was a recording engineer for Dragon Records, I think it was. And he lived locally in Croston, which isn't far away from me. And he said, yeah, come along, we'll sort you out. So I did this recording with him, and it was basically in his back room. He'd sort of shuttered it all off with curtains and things to dampen the echo. And we recorded it, and I did 12 songs on this tape, and I was really pleased with the outcome because I was able to do multi-tracking and things like that, so I could play guitar and a banjo and maybe a couple of vocal tracks as well. I didn't go mad on that because my first foray into it, and I didn't want to overdo it.
No.
I was pleased with that. And then I dropped out of the system because I moved to Sheffield with the job. Wow. So I've got this case full of tapes and nowhere to sell them. So I've sold a few, but then because when I was in Sheffield, there was no really real opportunity to go out at night,
right?
Because we were busy and we weren't getting back till sort of 7 or 8 o'clock. And the time you had tea, it's sort of 9, 9:30, and going out somewhere wasn't an option. Because you had to be up early in the morning, you know. So, and the clubs were mainly at the weekend when I was coming home.
All right.
So I never really got a chance to do
anything. You never got a chance to perform in a folk club in Yorkshire, really.
No, so it was a few years later that I came back home and saw a folk club locally to me and started to go along to that. And that sort of kicked me off again, going to folk clubs. And I got back in touch with Chris, who did the recording, and I said, any chance of doing another one? Yeah, he said, come along. So we did this CD at this point, and I called it Brown Photographs after one of the Five Penny Pieces songs.
Mm-hmm.
So there was, I think it was 18 songs on that. And Chris looked at the things I was doing and said, there's two CDs here, there's two projects here. There's a main, you know, your main any sort of song project, but there's also this Lancashire song project of Harry Boardman's old songs. We'll split it up. We'll do this one for you first, and then we'll do the Harry Boardman one. So, and this was like 20 years after Harry had died.
Right.
He died in 1987, and this was 2007, something like that. And so we did the Brown Photographs, and then we embarked on the Harry Boardman songs, the Lancashire songs of Harry Boardman, which was great, actually, because it was a case of we could do this thing and get it out there. And the number of people who came up and said, oh, yes, I remember Harry. And they'd tell us all sorts of stories about when they knew Harry and which clubs he used to go to. Because he actually opened probably one of the first, I'll say, folk clubs in the country. But they didn't call them folk clubs in those days. It was like song sessions or something like that, music session. It was only later on that the term folk club was coined. So that was those two CDs. And then a bit later on, I think I mentioned earlier on maybe that Harry and Roy Palmer brought this book out called Manchester Ballads.
Right.
And Chris had another chat. We had another chat over a pint or two. And we said, well, what if Harry had recorded all those? You know, if he'd lived, would he have recorded them all? And we know he'd done a few of them on some of his LPs, but he never got round to doing the rest of them. So we thought, go on, let's do that. We'll record all 35. Took us 12 months to do it, and we got all sorts of information along the way, because Roy Palmer had sort of left it open to interpretation. And he said, if anybody comes up with any more information about any of these songs, please let us know. And we found the original tunes to one or two of the songs that they hadn't been able to find. I mean, when they produced the book, it was pre-internet, so it wasn't as easy to go and find tunes and things like it is today. And there's one song which we're going to listen to at the end of the program, I believe, called The Calico Printer's Clerk. In the 60s, it was somebody found it, the words on a broadside, and they put a tune to it. And it's a popular tune, a popular song. It was picked up by a lot of people. The chorus goes, she was very fond of dancing, but allow me to remark that one fine day she danced away with the calico printer's clerk. Everybody sang that tune, mm-hmm. and everybody thought, yes, that's a great tune. But it wasn't the proper tune, it wasn't the original. We managed to find the original sheet music. It was written by Harry Clifton, who was a prolific songwriter of the time in the music hall era. The music was by Charles Coote Jr., mm-hmm. and it's actually called She Was Very Fond of Dancing when you look at the sheet music.
Right.
Calico Printer's Clerk was just a subtitle of it, but we're going to hear that later on, and I think people will be surprised.
You're going to be performing that one yourself.
I'll be singing that one myself.
Yeah, which is excellent. Yeah. And I've heard it before, obviously. Yeah. So, you know, you sung all these other people's songs. Did you ever think of writing any of your own stuff?
I always found it difficult to do that, but when somebody waves money in front of you and says, would you mind singing or writing a song for this particular project? And this was for the Shrewsbury Railway Heritage Trust.
Oh, right.
Maggie, my other half, her mother was a director of this trust. They weren't going to restore the whole railway, but they were trying to restore bits of it, mm-hmm. Certainly buildings and things like that, and make people more aware of this old railway that ran from Shrewsbury to Llanaminnick in mid Wales. It didn't last very long once it had been built in the 1850s. The money ran out, and eventually somebody did try and revive it. A Colonel Stevens, who was quite famous on the railway front for buying old engines and carriages and things like that and restoring railways. But even he didn't have the chance to make any money out of it.
Right.
In the 1940s, the line was used for shunting munitions in and out of various places. Mm-hmm. But after that, it went, you know, so it's not there anymore.
So where did it run from to?
It went from Shrewsbury to Llanaminnick in mid Wales.
All right.
Yeah, and back again. The mines at Llanaminnick, so it went in and out.
So it's
called the Old Potts Railway.
Have you performed that song at many places?
I don't do it very often, to be honest. We used to do it, we'd do two or three concerts to raise money for the Shrewsbury Railway Heritage Trust. But occasionally I've done it since, but not very often.
Is it one you've recorded?
I have recorded it, yeah.
I'll try and find that sometime.
So
what's your next choice of music then?
Well, the next choice is by Flanders and Swann.
Oh, of course, yes, I remember those.
They were famous in the 50s and 60s. I think their big things were the drop of a hat and the drop of another hat. You know, it's like a review of things.
And I think it is something called Wells Fargo as well, I think, to remember.
Something like that, yeah.
Because I did write an article about them at one time, and I actually got in touch with Flanders' widow, and she runs a charity called Tripscope. Tripscope, it's called, is a charity. She's American, American lady. And I interviewed her for the thing, which didn't actually get accepted by the lady, so... But I've got it somewhere, so I do know a little bit about them. And obviously, he was in a wheelchair, and Swann played the piano. And they were really good. I remember the Omnibus Song and things like that. You know, and
a Transport of Delight.
And they were very, very witty, weren't they?
They were witty. Oh yeah.
So we'll listen to that now. Then, what's it called?
It's called Slow Train. It's written at the time of the Beeching Acts.
I remember that.
The Beeching Report into the British Railways, which became known as the Beeching Acts.
Mm-hmm.
I think Beeching had a bit of a bad press over this. He's guilty of really swinging cuts on the railway. I mean, mm-hmm. Cornwall virtually lost all of its railways, as did Wales. Very few there. And all these little branch lines that... ran from the villages to the towns, mm-hmm. were all cut. A lot of people's gardens now run over where the tracks used to run. And I know some of the local ones that aren't there anymore. But they had a list. I think there was an article in the Guardian newspaper at the time, 1963, that sort of went through all these stations that were going to be closed. And Michael Flanders, in his way, incorporated these stations into the song. Some of them are still there. They talk about St. Erth to St. Ives. Those two stations are still with us.
Oh, right.
Yes.
And I remember it actually spawned a comedy about two decades later. Old Dr. Beeching.
That's correct,
and Sue Pollard was in that, wasn't she? And all the gang from Heidi High. So, I remember that very well. So this is the song then, Flanders and Swann with Slow Train.
On the slow train. Millersdale for Tideswell. Kirby Muxlow, Malkop and Scholar Green. No more will I go to Blandford Forum and Mortyhoe. On the slow train from Midsummer Norton and Mumby Road. No churns, no porter, no cat on a seat at Chorlton, Cumharney or Chester le Street. We won't be meeting again on the slow train. I'll travel no more from Littleton Badsey to Openshaw. At Long Santon I'll stand well clear of the doors no more. No whitewashed pebbles, no up and no down, from Formby Four Crosses to Dunstable Town. I won't be going again on the slow train. On the main line and the good siding, the grass grows high at Dogdyke, Tumby Woodside, and Trouble House Halt. The sleeper sleep at Audlem and Ambergate. No passenger waits on Chitterling platform or Cheslin Hay. No one departs, no one arrives from Selby to Goole, from St. Earth to St. Ives. They've all passed out of our lives on the slow train. On the slow train. Cockermouth for Buttermere.
On the slow train.
Armley Moor, Adam. Pye Hill and Summercoats.
On the slow train.
Windmill End.
So perhaps we can bring your story up to date a little bit now and talk about, I believe that you started a folk club and that is where you met your partner. Is that correct?
Not quite. No. This folk club was already going in Parbold, and it was a local Ramblers group who set it up. So it wasn't a folk club in what we'd call the traditional sense of a folk club. It was just a load of people who got together who sang a few songs, and they met in the upstairs room of a pub. Unfortunately, they had to pay for that room, so whatever money they got in every week went towards paying for the room. Eventually, they moved from that pub and went to another pub where they didn't have to pay for the room, which was jolly good. I went to the first pub one night, I think, because I was busy doing other things. But then when they moved to the Railway Hotel in Parbold, I started going on a more regular basis. And I used to be the mystery man, because I used to sit there. I don't think anybody knew me. I didn't really know them. So I used to sit there on my own and do the songs, you know, when I was asked. And then eventually the guy who ran it didn't want to run it anymore. So I was asked, there was a meeting and it was a case of who shall we get to run it? And all eyes came to me for some reason, because I'd had experience in running clubs. I didn't want to do it on my own. So Maggie, who is now my partner, decided, you know, she'd help me run that. So... We started running it. Eventually, the brewery decided that they wanted to change the pub round, so the room we had was no longer viable because it was being knocked into one, area around the bar. So it was going to be a sports pub with pool tables and screens and all the rest of it. So we set off on this amazing pub crawl around the area to find another venue.
What pub crawl isn't amazing?
Oh, I know. Anyway, the fact is, we just went to one pub and we asked if their room upstairs was available, and they said, yes, when do you want to start? So
excellent.
That was in the Red Lion at Newbury, which is just around the corner from us. So we've been there, I'll say, ever since. We had to move out and then we've come back again. But we're still going, despite COVID. So it's basically a singer's club. We don't have guests, only on very rare occasions, if we've got enough money to pay for a guest. And they'll be the guests who I decide on. So yeah. I'm not saying they'll be... Well, most of them are friends of mine anyway. So we've had a few. Well, they've all been good guest nights that we've had because we build them up and make sure people come along to see the guest. You know, it's a night off for the singers. I sort of do the introduction and a few songs to introduce the night and then get the guest on them, same in the second half. But we've had one or two who they're still talking about it 10 years later.
Oh, that's brilliant. Yeah,
but a guy called Peter Bond, who lives in Rochdale, or Milne Row, just outside Rochdale, and I do quite a few of his songs, and I know him quite well, so he'd not been doing folk clubs for a while because he had a job as a guitar teacher in schools, so he didn't want to sort of do that and then go out at night and ruin his hands with the fingers on the guitar. But he was doing one or two gigs at that point, so I asked him if he'd do it, and he said yeah. And he got me up halfway through his set. He said, "Mark, do you want to come up and do a few songs with me?" Because he knew I did the songs. Mm. But when you get up there and you start playing them the way you sing them and play them, you find it's slightly different the way he sings them. Yeah. We got through, though.
A couple
of false starts, but we got through.
Well, seasoned performers by that time, weren't you? Yeah.
But people still talk about that night. So
I believe when COVID happened, you sort of moved everything to Zoom, didn't you?
We did. It was a new thing, Zoom. To me, Zoom at the time was a recording medium, if you like. I got a Zoom recorder, which was tiny little recording unit,
right,
which was a very good system. But Zoom, what we're talking about now is now this interactive video link system.
Yeah.
We decided to have a go, so we had half an hour because you get 40 minutes. You can get 40 minutes for nothing. A few of us joined this Zoom thing we set up, and we said, yeah, it's going to work this. I mean, they'd had a few teething problems with anybody listening to this who does Zooms knows about original sound and various other things.
Of course.
But Zoom has got better because the original sound means that it plays all the frequencies. Without original sound, it sort of compresses everything into a band of a frequency for vocal talking. So it misses out the high ones, it misses out the low ones. And it also filters background noise and things like that, which for singing and playing wasn't good at all because it sounded like it was underwater. Yeah. But the program got better and people got used to it. And we've been running it since lockdown. Was it March 2020 when we locked down? We've been running it every week, more or less. And we're still getting people. We're actually back in the pub now, but we do once a month on Zoom on a Monday to keep in touch with everybody who has joined us from all over the country and indeed some places of the world. We get two or three people coming in from America and Canada and they look forward to it. So we don't want to lose them.
No, that's great. So you need to keep it going. We're doing that. Lancashire Authors is telling them one meeting on Zoom every year. Yeah. Which is good because we can get people from out of this area to come as well, obviously, and that's a good thing.
Yeah.
So the first time I met you, I think, was around 2015, and you were playing at, I think it's the year that Radio Lancashire came along and did a little interview with us on Lancashire Day, and you played, and honestly, after I heard that, I just thought, wow, I like this guy. And I believe at that time, unless my memory is deserting me here, I believe you were talking about your dad at that time, something about your dad that inspired you or something.
Possibly. I mean, he was the guy who brought home the LP of Fivepenny Piece.
So that was where I started
getting interested in more folk music than I was at the time.
Yeah.
I mean, he used to sing as well, you know. When he was young, he used to go around with his mates around the pubs when they had pianos in pubs, you know. They could sing around the piano. So he did have a history of singing, you know. But he used to write poems as well, so...
Oh, very good. Yeah. So and was he proud of you when you started off in that?
I think so, because I mean, he used to come with us, so
good,
you know, and he enjoyed it as well.
That's great. So of course, from there, I mean, we've seen you a few times, and you've also helped me with some projects I've had. I mean, in 2016, Oswaldtis Library was threatened with closure, as a lot of libraries were at that time, and I started a campaign to try and save it, and we did this concert at the library, which lasted more or less all afternoon, and you came all the way from where you live, about 30 miles away, and you didn't even take any fee.
No.
And then I got people like Callum Thomas, Les Bond, and the guy who was the writer of the year that year, Dan Forrester, all came and gave their services for nothing. it was a really good concert. We got over 30 people there, and everybody enjoyed it. So that was really good. And as I say, you've also done something for me at the Library of Friends since, and that went again a full audience, and everybody loved it. You know, and I keep asking you for one particular song which I really love, and that's John Willis Ferret, and and I find it really amusing. I don't think it offends many people these days, does it?
I love that song because it mentions vicars and vicars' wives and mayors and things like fantastic. That. And I have sung that song so many times in front of people like that.
Yeah,
and of course the secretary of the Lancashire Authors Association is Mrs. Olive Riley. And even she gets a mention in there, Mrs. Riley's Brandy.
Oh, yes, that's right.
So I enjoy singing that song. And it's interesting to see how people react to it, you know, especially when they're named in it. Not named, but, the vicar and the vicar's wife. And the
actually,
mayor.
Olive is not secretary anymore. We've got a young lady called Sarah Robin now, but she is still competition secretary and still deputy chairman. Yeah. So, yes.
No, she's still involved.
She'll love that you mentioned that,
yeah,
I'm sure.
Yeah. I think I also did something else at your writer's thing somewhere along the line. Because I know you actually put a camera up and recorded it.
That's right. Yes, we used to. What we did, the Osmotus Writers Group, which I started in 2010, obviously with the hiatus with when the library shut for a bit and then opened again, and then obviously with COVID. But since 2010, I've got it back up and running again now. And we used to have a Christmas do. So we went to Osmotus Social Club. And we had this Christmas do every year, and I invited you over. Again, you came for just expenses, which was wonderful. And you spent a good 2 hours there, didn't you?
Yeah.
And you brought some CDs, and people bought them. I bought some as well. You even wrote a poem for the occasion, as I remember.
I did, yes. Yeah. It was called Getting Her Out of the House. Mm-hmm. And it's about trying to get your other half to get ready to go somewhere.
That's right, I remember that. Yeah. Well, and if anybody wants to listen to that, it's still available on YouTube.
It is, yeah.
And it's just Mark Dowding at Osmotus Social Club. So that's great. Is there anything else you want to add before we... do you want to give any advice to anybody that might want to follow in your steps as far as folk singing is concerned and stuff?
Well, I suppose the only advice I could say is to me, folk singing is about history. The songs, you know, the historical songs anyway, I mean, people write their own songs, you know, these singer-songwriters, which are more to do with themselves than anybody else. But if you go look at the historical aspects of songs, have a look and research into what the song is about. And I think you'll find it's quite fulfilling when you realise, you know, what this song has been written about. It might be a song that was written at the time, you know, the 1830s or whatever, when there was some disaster, or, you know, like the Peterloo disaster and mining disasters and things like that. Surprising how many songs came out of that. Maybe just to raise money for the families. You know, they'd sell them on the streets for a tuppence or a penny or something like that. But, you know, if you're interested in the songs, find out more about them.
I mean, I think I see a point. I see a point to this more just by talking to you. Because when you think about it, you listen to songs that were written in a certain period, you get to know a lot about the history of that period, don't you?
You do.
You know, and you get a bit of a feel of what the in some cases, desperation was at that time.
Yeah.
And I think that's very important. And I do, and I know that Sid Calderbank does a lot. I mean, he recites all sorts. I don't know how he ever remembers everything he does, but he doesn't seem to refer to any documents or anything. He just does it off the top of his head. And Long may he be able to do that, because you and him together, well, it's just like... It's like a class act, isn't it?
Well, I'm glad you think so.
Yeah, well, I think so anyway. Yeah. And Sid will be pleased to hear that as well.
I'm sure he will, yeah.
But yes, so for the time being then, thank you very much, Mark Dowding. And it's been a pleasure talking to you today. And we will finish off with a song of your own, which is called Calico Pinterest Clark. Thank you very much.
Thank you.
Manchester, that city of cotton twist and twills, there lived the subject of me song, the cause of all me ills. She was handsome, young and 20, her eyes were azure blue. Admirers she had plenty, and her name was Dorothy True. She was very fond of dancing, but allow me to remark that one fine day she danced away with the calico printer's clerk. A At a private ball I met her in 1863. I never can forget her, though she was unkind to me. I was dressed in the pink of fashion, me lavender gloves were new. I danced the valse Circassian with charming Dorothy Drew. She was very fond of dancing, but allow me to remark that one fine day she danced away with the calico printer's clerk. We schottished and we polkered to the strains the band did play. We valsed and we mazurked till she valsed me heart away. I whispered in this fashion as round the room we flew, doing the valse of Vigna, I love you, Dorothy Drew. She was very fond of dancing, but allow me to remark that one fine day she danced away with the calico printer's clerk. For months and months attention unto her I did pay, till with her condescension she led me quite astray. The money I expended I'm ashamed to tell to you. I'll inform you how it ended with myself and Dorothy Drew. She was very fond of dancing, but allow me to remark that one fine day she danced away with the calico printer's clerk. I received an intimation she a visit meant to pay unto a near relation who lived some miles away. In a month she'd be returning, I must take a short adieu. But her love for me was burning, deceitful Dorothy Drew. She was very fond of dancing, but allow me to remark that one fine day she danced away with the calico printer's clerk. At 9 o'clock next morning, to breakfast I sat down. The smile my face adorning was soon changed into a frown. For in the morning paper, a paragraph met me view, that Jones, a calico printer's clerk, had married Miss Dorothy Drew. She was very fond of dancing, but allow me to remark that one fine day she danced away with the calico printer's clerk. She was very fond of dancing, but allow me to remark that one fine day she danced away with the calico printer's clerk.